welcome listeners to this broadcast of Shooting from the Hip, brought to you by Sim Trainer, the Dayton area's first indoor range and firearms training center. We're located at 2031 Dryden Road, right across from DP&L in Moraine. You can visit us on the web at www.sim-trainer.com, or you can give us a call at 937-293-3914. If you'd like to get into the queue, get on the show today, please give us a call at 457-1290. That's 457-1290, and we'd be more than glad to answer any of your questions, talk to you about firearms, whatever's on your mind. There's a lot of issues going on, or a lot of matters that probably need to be discussed. I wanted to, first of all, shout out to the participants of the Blue Star Mothers of America golf tournament that's going on this afternoon. I hope they're having a great time raising money. And I want to remind our listeners, if you'd like to contribute to that very worthy organization, their website is www.bluestarmothersdayton.com. That's bluestarmothersdayton.com. And we have a link to that website on our website. And I encourage you to donate to them throughout the year, because they do a lot of good for our troops and our people who come back from being in military service. And it's a great organization. I'm probably one of the top three or four that I've ever contributed to or felt comfortable with, and great people and a great cause. So those people, if you're listening out there, I hope you're having a great day. It's a great day for a golf tournament. I imagine that tournament's probably winding down and the after event festivities are beginning, but I hope it was very successful. I also want to mention, as far as in the news, as I've mentioned a couple of times over the last couple weeks, I want our listeners to pay particular attention to what's going on at the national level, because I think some of the information that's getting released is nothing but a smokescreen for some of the bigger agendas, and in particular this NSA issue that's being talked about so much in the media. There's certainly concerns and issues there, but it's my personal belief, and I think it's going to come to play out to be true, is that it was purposely set out there to be misleading, because of there are very more significant and substantial scandals like the IRS scandal, the Benghazi issue, and right now the United Nations treaty that is being discussed, I'm sure, behind closed doors in reference to how they're going to impose various provisions. And along those lines, I thought it was very noteworthy and newsworthy that the Nevada Governor Sandoval vetoed some provisions of his state's background bill. That's another issue. I wanted to mention, it wasn't him. It was Congressman Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania, Republican of Pennsylvania, who introduced a bill that would restrict funding related to the United Nations Arms Trade Treaty in the National Defense Authorization Bill, which is H.R. 1960. And basically, what he was proposing is that under no circumstances would any funding from the National Defense Authorization Bill be directed towards supporting in any way, shape, or form the United Nations Arms Treaty. So we're going to be following that again. That's H.R. 1960, and making sure that some of those things are passed and become law, because it'll be an obvious beneficial obstacle to anybody that tries to backdoor any provisions of that treaty. As Mark reported last week, and I think it's still true, the treaty has not yet been signed.
If it has, I haven't been able to find any place where it was. I would think that would be something that at least the NRA would identify and send out quickly, but I have not been able to find that it's been signed. So the fact that it's staying kind of below the radar, you know, maybe it's because they don't want to draw attention to some of the other things they're trying to do. I don't know exactly, but
that's my supposition, and I think it's right on point, because they've reinitiated hearings. They've invited victims of some of the national tragedies involving firearms to start opening another debate about gun control. And that's being attacked on several levels, or they're attacking it on several levels. But I also thought it was interesting that Nevada Governor Sandoval, as I mentioned earlier, he went ahead and basically vetoed a bill in Nevada whereby they were...
Well, it would have been basically California-style background checks. So yeah. Anytime a private sale occurred, it would have to go through a background check. Almost any time a firearm changes hands in Nevada. And he had said all along that he was going to veto that bill. And then when the bill passed and was sent to his desk, He got thousands of phone calls saying, you must veto this thing. And he, I mean, it would have been tough to work in his office during that time because they were getting about 5-1 against.
Well, not only that, but the Nevada Sheriffs and Chiefs Association sent them a very directed letter, which he quoted in his press conference following his vetoing of the bill. He said that requiring the mandatory background checks of private sales it would place an unreasonable burden on law-abiding citizens. It would be basically unenforceable, and it was their professional opinion that it would have, listen to this, it would have absolutely no effect on keeping firearms out of the hands of criminals, something we've been promoting all along. This whole concept of the misnaming of the universal background checks, there's no such thing. They've not defined even what is going to be a comprehensive background check that could have at least the make inroads into curtailing some of the violence. But as we've mentioned so long, no matter how far they go in that, even if they go ahead and they try to coordinate some of the mental health issues and criminal records and things of that nature, you're still going to deal with the fact that these are criminals who don't pay attention to the laws. And no matter what prohibitions you held against them, it's not going to really matter.
Just a little bit of an aside on that. NRA endorsed the senator from Nevada, U.S. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, when he was being, when he was up for reelection. And apparently in thanks for that, he released a statement shortly after the veto saying he was deeply disappointed in Sandoval for vetoing that legislation that would have done nothing to prevent any bad things from happening and would have put a burden on the law-abiding citizens. So there you go.
And I want to remind our listeners, 2014 is right around the corner.
Well, it's not far.
And there's a price to pay for some of the stances some of these people are taking on the issues that we obviously hold dear to our hearts. And I want you to pay attention to what's going on. Make sure you voice your opinions to your representatives in your respective areas and let it be known how you feel.
We've got a lot more things to talk about on the show today, but let's go out to the phones. We'll talk to Mike, who's calling from Miamisburg. Mike, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, gents. Appreciate you talking to me. We'll be 45 days since I've turned in my paperwork to the sheriff's office in Montgomery County this upcoming Friday. And I'm wondering if I don't hear anything from them, things do sometimes slide through the cracks, what's my next course of action?
Well, I suspect that it didn't slide through the crack, but here's what is going on. We have just again started renewing licenses. There was a year when about 5 years ago, the license extended from 4 years to 5 years. And so the people that had their license before that didn't have to get another license. And there was a kind of a year of no renewals. Very few renewals that went on. So now they're doing renewals for the people who got their licenses 5 years ago. And you're also seeing renewals for the people who got their licenses at the beginning of the Ohio concealed carry back in 2004, because they're now due for their second renewal. So between that and the much greater increase in the number of people who are interested in concealed carry, I suspect that they are just running a little bit behind. I do know that somebody went down there to get their license, their initial license submitted, and they were told that it would be a full 45 days. Now, they are required by law to do it within 45 days, but if they can't get it done, either because of staffing or just the volume of requests, that's not too terribly hard to understand, at least right now, given the surge.
I will also assure you that the Sheriff's Department has felt the pinch of the budget cuts, and they are operating on minimal staff, and they're doing the best they can. I have very close friends in the Sheriff's Office, and they're pretty straightforward when we talk about issues, and I think Mark's directly or exactly right. You take a combination of all those factors. It's sort of like the ammo and gun thing that was going on, the shortages over the last several months. There's several issues that have contributed to those shortages, and there's several issues, obviously, that's contributing to the delays in the issuance of these licenses.
Okay, very good.
One more thing I would add is just be patient, and I don't think it's unreasonable in the next week or so to maybe give a call down. You're probably going to get on a voicemail, but leave a very short and brief message and say, just checking on the status. I know it's been so many days. Give me a call. Give me an email. Let me know. No problem. And I think that you'd get some sort of a response.
You may also have to go down there. I don't know that they will tell you the status of the license over the phone, because it's hard for them to know who you are and whether it's appropriate for you to get that information. But that's just one of the kind of the problems with asking the question on the phone. But I know that they are working them, and they are working pretty hard.
Well, that's when I went down, they did indicate that it was all going to be all of 45 days. And, of course, this took place, it turned in my paper just a few days after the Sandy Hook mess.
Oh, okay.
So I imagine that they were being inundated even then. So good information. I will give them a holler if I don't find something from them in the mail next week.
Great, Mike. Thanks very much for calling the show.
Okay, and one other matter I wanted to discuss last week. We mentioned that an appellate court decision in Illinois resulted in a rather rapid construction and implementation of a concealed carry bill in Illinois, and I just happened to see an overview of what the bill entailed, because Mark and I hadn't had a chance to read it, and it is 300 and some pages long. But the one thing I wanted to mention...
168 pages.
Okay, I wanted to mention that there's some strong opinion, and this was delivered by the Illinois Rifles State Rifle Association, Rifle and Pistol Association, which is like the sister or brother organization of the Ohio Rifle and Pistol Association. It's kind of the NRA-affiliated organization in the state of Illinois, and they came out and said, number one, they think the governor is going to make a real strong pitch to veto it, which obviously is going to have consequences, and there's going to be strong pushback in that regard. But he mentioned that some of the provisions that we had talked about, the administrative procedures had not been dealt with yet.
Right.
And all of the issues involving reciprocity, out-of-state residents, and those things haven't been hashed out, because, again, it was rather, I guess, hastily put together, and they didn't have a chance to hash out all of those secondary issues. They did talk about what they call safe haven locations, like parking lots in the locations of the – they have probably three or four times more prohibited zones than we do here in Ohio. And I'm not going to go through
several
the litany.
Pages.
Yeah, I'm not going to go through the litany of the places they can't take it, because it really doesn't apply to us. Suffices to say that we're going to stay on top of that. And the main thing we're interested in is any potential reciprocity provision that would be relevant, because I-70 is a major route for travelers going from east to west.
Now, one of the things that I did find is that although they don't have reciprocity provisions in the current law as it was passed, what they do have is a statement, and I'll just read it to you. It's kind of interesting. Nothing in this act shall prohibit a non-resident from transporting a concealed firearm within his or her vehicle in Illinois if the concealed firearm remains within his or her vehicle and the non-resident, number one, is not prohibited from owning or possessing a firearm under federal law, is eligible to carry a firearm in public under the laws of his or her state or territory of residence, and number three, is not in possession of a license under the act. In other words, you don't have an Illinois license, therefore, you'd still be able to carry concealed in your vehicle as you pass through. So I consider that the I-70 provision. So if you're driving from Ohio to St. Louis or park points west, you would be able to stay in your car, get gas in Indiana, drive through the southern Illinois, go to have lunch on the river in St. Louis, and you'd be good. So I think that's a good provision. There's a whole lot more in there as well. That's on page 18 of 168 pages, if anybody wants to go look at that. And I did put a link to the legislation on our Facebook page on facebook.com/SimTrainer. Well, we need to take our first break for the hour, and when we come back, we'll take your calls at 457-1290. 457-1290 is the number here into the studio. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Hi, this is Cam Edwards from NRANews.com, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio, WHIO.
Welcome back to the show, and if you'd like to get on the show today, remember to call 457-1290. That's 457-1290. I want to shift gears just a little bit, and with Father's Day being tomorrow, I first of all want to extend a happy Father's Day to all you fathers out there, and I can't think of a better thing that you people who are looking for last-minute opportunities to maybe get your dad something he'd really like is to come down to Sim Trainer and get him a membership. There's a couple of different membership opportunities, and he could either get an associate membership or a full-time membership, and that would be a great opportunity for him to come down. And if he doesn't have his own firearm, we have a Try It Before You Buy It program, where if he has a gun that he was thinking about getting, he certainly could shoot that, and our staff down at the range would be more than glad to assist you in that capacity.
Set that up as a gift certificate, so you
absolutely
get a membership and Try It Before You Buy It all at
absolutely
the same time.
Absolutely. We can do anything. We can add lessons to it, whatever you're interested in doing. I had some of our longtime members come in the other night, and they're their wives came in with them. And the one wife, it's the first time she'd been there. And she said that Frank wanted to take the rifle class, but it was Father's Day. And I said, well, if he wanted to take the rifles class and it was Father's Day, what was the objection? She goes, well, I wanted to do something on Father's Day. I said, well,
come take
the rifle class or get Frank the rifle class. And then afterward or before, either go to breakfast or go to dinner. But for some reason, I think some people think that the day is more involved than it is. But I can't think of a better way to let your father pick what he wants to do. And if it's go shoot and give him the opportunity to do that. So I'm going to extend that opportunity if you want to do that. The gift certificate's a great way to go because people want to try to get things planned up. And we can customize gift certificates for whatever quantity or whatever situation you have.
So instead of getting that tie that, you know, he's already got one or three or 50 in his closet. And so instead of a tie, you know, just change to precious metals, a little bit of steel, a little brass, maybe some lead.
Well, yeah, we're perfect. Showing our age when we talk about the tie, because right now, Mark, I think the biggest issue, at least with my kids, is a screwdriver set.
Oh, screwdriver. You know,
the
okay.
multi-screwdriver set. And, I mean, I've got so many screwdrivers.
And you don't use screwdrivers.
Well, I think they do that strategically because then they get the screwdrivers.
Dad, don't you need a new baseball mitt? Let's go out to the phone and talk to Ed, who's calling from Kettering. Ed, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark, Jeff, how are you doing today?
Great. How can we help you?
I just wanted to reassure that gentleman that just called in concerned about a CCW.
Okay.
I went down on the 13th, and I turned mine in on the 12th of April. They are so swamped down there that it's going to take longer than 45 days, like you guys said.
Yeah, that's unfortunate because people who have submitted their license, you know, they understand what the requirement is and expect to get the license back within a reasonable amount of time. And I think that might be something that for those of us who already have a license and are going to need to renew, to also keep that in mind, that you might want to just start a little bit earlier than you do have 90 days in advance. So it might be, given the workload right now, it might not be a bad idea to go in early.
Yeah, the other option is to explore adjacent counties to see what their time lag is, either in Greene County, Warren County, Miami County, I believe those
Preble.
Are the three.
Preble. Yeah.
Yeah, any county that's adjacent to Montgomery, you could call them. They're going to probably be faced with similar shortages of manpower and the numbers of people coming to renew or get their initial one. So that's another option for people out there. But I think the big thing right now is patience.
Yeah, it is, as you mentioned, it is a workload question, and it's also a staffing question, and they're just going to have to, you know, they've got what they've got to work with, and they're doing the very best they possibly can.
Yeah, they are really swamped down there. Now, I talked to somebody, and they went to Greene County and got, like, within 7 days.
Oh, that there you go.
Yeah, smaller population, a lot more rural area in Greene County as well, so, you know, that could do it. And, I mean, I live in Greene County, so that's where I go. And also, for those who are renewing, it's a lot easier if you go to the county where you got your original license issued. So for those who are looking to get a new license, if you want to go to an adjacent county and make that your county for concealed carry, that's not a bad idea. Ed, thanks very much for calling the show.
Thank you.
And again, that just goes to the issue. What's relevant, what's going on here is the patience. I want to, maybe that's kind of the word of the day. We talked about being patient about guns and ammo, and I want to assure people that ammo is starting to turn. Guns are really starting to show up on a pretty regular basis. So if you're looking for a firearm, be sure to give us a chance at Sim Trainer to try to accommodate whatever your interests are. And we have enough ammo for all of our classes and our league and recreational shooting.
You do want to be patient again with the ammunition, though. Don't buy any more than you need right now. And when the prices come down a little bit more, availability goes up, you can get more. We'll see you back after the news. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM WHIO.
Hi, this is Rachel Parsons, spokesperson for the National Rifle Association, and you're on Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio WHIO.
I want to welcome our listeners back to the show. If you want to get on the show, give us a call at 457-1290, and we'll be more than glad to get you up on the screen. A couple things going on at Sim Trainer. We're in the middle of our tactical rifle class. We started last night. We go down to the range tomorrow, and I want to remind our listeners, particularly our members, that if you're interested in purchasing an M4 AR variant rifle, that we have an abundant supply. They've been coming pretty regularly recently, and the prices are very, very, very reasonable. And with everybody that purchases an M4 variant or AR variant rifle, you're going to get a minimum of 250 rounds of ammunition. I don't know that this summer we'll be able to get another tactical rifle class together just because of scheduling and the heat and those issues, but certainly this fall we will have one. And we can also, I've done probably way more people, I've run way more people through private lessons than have gone through our tactical rifle introductory class. And in about 2 to 3 hours, we can get you very competent, very familiar with your new purchase. And then if you have the opportunity, which it's very easy to do, you could go purchase a day pass to go out to Spring Valley and you could shoot at 50 and 100 yards and sight it in at those longer distances, which would be another option, and you wouldn't have to sit through an 8-hour class, and you'd be getting the same core amount of material. So if you're interested, remember that we have several models, manufacturers such as DPMS, Wyndham Weaponry, Core 15, Smith & Wesson, Rock River's even starting to ship again. So those guns are becoming more available. And several of the people who between late November, early December, and March or April, where they paid, you know, maybe two times as much for those guns, you're not going to have to deal with that issue when you come to see us. And we're going to do you right, and we're going to tell you quite bluntly, it doesn't matter. It's going to come down to what you want, because they're all darn good rifles and they do what they're supposed to do, and they're fun to shoot. And the reason it's so easy for us to teach is, people don't understand this, but the M4AR variant rifle is easier to teach for most people than pistol. And the reason for that is, you know, there's several reasons, but the main reason, you're looking at a longer sight radius. You got a very comfortable system that absorbs the recoil. There's very little muzzle flip, so to speak, with the rifle. You pull the trigger, you're on sights, and your next shot's virtually at or near point of aim, point of impact. So it's real easy to teach people, and the functional operation is very simple. So give us a chance if you're looking. But like so many other, don't rush out and buy. We have several that will give you an opportunity to try. And just last night, there were probably five people who they kind of shared back and forth, and they found that, wow, if I had my eyes closed, I wouldn't have been able to tell which one was which, because they're all so darn good, and the configurations are very similar. You've got differences in whether you have a quad rail forend or a round tubular style forend. It just comes down to what you like. Some people like to put a vertical forend handle on it. You got a collapsible stock, you got fixed stocks, but for the most part, the functional aspects of the gun are identical, and they do exactly what they're supposed to do.
But they're all scary looking, and they all make Nancy Pelosi just, you know, be very nervous. So that's a good thing.
My son was just at a family function today, and he called me. He said, "Dad, you're not going to believe this." They jumped me as soon as I got in there and asked me why I had to have guns and what you're doing, you know, where you're working. And you mean you work at a gun shop? And he mentioned that his dad is the owner. And he's like, "Oh, gosh, I wonder what that's like." And, of course, Mark had some pretty lively discussion to say. But he said, "Dad, there was one point when they said, 'What are you doing for Father's Day?' And Mark said, 'Going shooting,' because he's in the rifle class and he's going down the range." He said, "You're going to waste Father's Day down at the range?" And Mark had to tell him, "I couldn't think of a better place I'd rather be than on the rifle range tomorrow shooting rifles."
No kidding. There have been several things that have gone on in the last couple of weeks in the Ohio legislature, things that people, you know, may not have heard about. The House committee held its first hearing on House Bill 191, which aligns firearm definitions. That's what is called aligned firearm definitions. Basically, it changes one provision of the definitions in Ohio Revised Code, and it removes the magazine size as part of the definition of an automatic firearm. That's something that's been in for quite a while, and it's a completely ridiculous provision. Defines of a semi-automatic firearm as any firearm designed to fire a single cartridge and chamber the succeeding cartridge with the single function of a trigger. An automatic firearm means that you pull the trigger one time and it fires a successor of cartridges by the single function of a trigger. And then it also had this extra line that was added that says automatic firearm also means any semi-automatic firearm designed or specially adapted to fire more than 31 cartridges without reloading, unless it's 22 only. And that's simply not what happens. You don't change a semi-automatic weapon to an automatic weapon by inserting a large magazine. And so there has been a proposal now. State Representative John Becker has entered this bill that would remove that extra line in the definition so that a semi-automatic firearm is one that You pull the trigger, it fires one round. And a fully automatic is one that you pull the trigger and it continues to fire until you release the trigger, or it does, you know, something. Maybe it fires two or three, a burst fire mode. So I think that's one that will probably go. It's one I think is long overdue, and that's one that is currently being considered.
You mentioned also, Mark, there was a provision in there for the reduction of the time of the training time.
Different bill.
Okay.
There is another bill that has just been introduced, House Bill number 203. And that one has several things that it would include. It's introduced by Representative Johnson. There's several things that it changes. One is the promised change to reciprocity. Remember last year in House Bill 495, at the very end of the year, right at the end of the session, there were some attempts there were several arguments that were listed against the reciprocity provisions, and they wanted a delay. Initially, they thought maybe they would delay the enactment of those provisions for an additional 3 months so they could set up procedures. Eventually, they just removed those from the bill. So the bill went through, but without any changes to our reciprocity. Right now, Ohio reciprocity requires that in order for your license from another state to be recognized in Ohio, your state must sign a reciprocity agreement with Ohio's Attorney General. And that then says that they will recognize our license, we will recognize their license. And that's fine as far as it goes, but there are some states like Colorado, for example, which I'm familiar with because I've got family that lives there, and they do not have a provision for signing a reciprocity agreement. Their law says our license, our state will recognize your license from any state if your state recognizes our license. It's just automatic reciprocity as long as the other state recognizes the Colorado license. The Colorado will then recognize the license from their state. Ohio is not one of the states that recognizes their license because there's nobody over in Colorado that is authorized to sign a reciprocity agreement. So we would recognize their license because their license is very similar in terms of the issuing requirements to the Ohio license. We can't recognize theirs because they won't sign it, and because we can't recognize theirs, they won't recognize ours. This provision would change that so that any state that recognizes our license would also be recognized in Ohio, and that would solve that problem automatically. The other thing that it does is adds a non-resident license. So if you're in a state that does not have a shall issue concealed carry program, and you, for some reason, are not able to get a license because you can't provide whatever pound of flesh is necessary for you to convince somebody that that you should have a license, and therefore you can't get a license in your state, and you want to come to Ohio for some reason, you would now be able to get a non-resident license in Ohio. Now, on general principles, I don't like the idea of non-resident license. I much prefer having blanket reciprocity. The bill that was in the U.S. House last year that would have allowed for automatic reciprocity. If your state issues a license and somebody else has a license from their state, then your state automatically recognizes our license. And I think that would be a better answer. But given that we haven't got that yet, at least having a provision for people who are here in the state to be able to get a license that allows them to carry in Ohio, it's still having to play an extra deep game of concealed carry bingo. But at least it gives an option for places like that. Now, that license would probably not be recognized by several other states simply because there are many states now that will not recognize a non-resident license. And again, Colorado is one of those. So even if I had a Florida license and Colorado recognizes the Florida license because mine would be non-resident, it wouldn't be valid in Colorado. That's a provision that several states are now enacting to require people who get a license in their state to get the state license first. And then if you want some other license because you need to carry in that state and your license isn't good there, then that would go. So adding a non-resident provision to Ohio law, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a good thing. It would also eliminate the need for former military members applying for a concealed handgun license to acquire a competency certification, even if it's been more than 6 years. Currently, people who have been trained in the military to handle firearms, handgun basically, if they have that certification in the military and it's been less than 6 years, all they have to do is submit the application. They don't have to go through the Ohio training. This would extend that to anybody who is honorably discharged or retired from the military. It would change The disqualifiers. I haven't studied that yet, so I don't know exactly how they're changed, but it reduces some of the disqualifications for getting a license. It would permit, one of the other things that it would do, and this is one of the things that Jeff just mentioned, is that it would change the 12-hour requirement for training. Now, it would still require certification, it would still require training, it still has certain standards. But it would eliminate the fact that the training must be 10 hours in the classroom and 2 hours in the range. Now, that has pluses and minuses. Our class is currently longer than 12 hours because we think that there's more material that's important for people to have. And frankly, we've had only people complain on the way in. A lot of people on the way out said, man, I wish this class was longer because there was so much material to cover. I think changing that requirement is probably okay, but I think that what needs to go with that is a better definition of a qualification course of fire so that there is a much better standard, a generic standard, not a time standard, an actual content standard and a performance standard. And that's something that I think has been lacking in the way Ohio does concealed carry. It is one of the things that you'll find in the Illinois bill. The Texas bill also has this Texas concealed carry. Arizona, several other states that I'm familiar with, have a very specific course of fire that is required for people to be able to get a license in that state. And I think the idea is good. This is just going to committee now, so there will be a hearing on Tuesday. If you're interested in that, you should contact your state representative. You may also want to contact those who are on the committee that'll be hearing this and let them know what you think about it. I think, that's the best way for those of us who are interested in what's going on and who are interested in either having or currently have a license to carry concealed. The best way you can affect these changes is to let your legislators, your representatives know what you think about those issues and let them incorporate those things as they go forward.
You know, Mark, you mentioned several issues, but there's one that there's kind of one or two that are tied together that I have particularly strong feelings about, and it involves the training, and it evolved as a result of what's going on in law enforcement and private security. But it would be nice if they had just a demonstration of competency where people could test out and then maybe only have to take the legal issues relevant to concealed carry, and it would probably be a lot better because some of the people have very good skill and they don't need to sit through all that basic stuff.
I think that's a great suggestion, and there's several other things in that bill that are currently proposed, and we'll talk about those after this last break. Jeff and I will be back. If you'd like to be on the show, call the studio at 457-1290. This is Mark Avery and Jeff Pedro for Shooting from the Hip on 95.7 FM and AM 1290 News Talk Radio WHIO.
God bless America. This is your blood brother, Ted Nugent, and you're listening to Shooting from the Hip on News Talk Radio WHIO.
Right before the break, we were talking about some newly introduced legislation that would probably do some real good to further advance the concealed carry law in the state of Ohio. And one issue I brought up was the training, and it would be really nice, and this is something I probably need to take a more active role in getting a hold of people that can make decisions, is develop a little bit more reasonable protocol for skills-based curriculum as opposed to just setting a number of hours that everybody has to take regardless of their background, because it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I've been doing the class now for 9 years, and I have to say, probably 20 to 25% of the people coming through, they're pretty well tucked away with their firearms handling, their proficiency, and things of that nature. They've already explored some options for concealed carry as far as whether it's going to be a holster or whatever that the case might be. And there needs to be some provision for us to let them opt out of those portions of the training. And like Mark and I were talking on the break, maybe a standardized test that is online that has random questions and people answer those questions. You receive a certain score and then it gets entered into a centralized data bank that you pass the test and you're eligible to receive your license. But there's some issues that this law I certainly will bring up that I think will be very favorable changes.
So if you aren't familiar with this law, or you've not heard of it before, or you want to get more information about it, you can go out to the website at for the Ohio Legislature and you can download it. I will put a link on our page when I put the notes up for the show. Let's go out to the phones and talk to Duke, who's calling from Spring Valley. Duke, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate you letting me call in. And I'll tell you, I think everybody would agree that training is always a good thing. More training is better. But if you really believe the Second Amendment's a constitutional right, I think you should support any and all reductions in any kind of law or process that requires a permit. I mean, the idea of a permit's anathema to the idea of it being a constitutional right.
You, I completely agree with that, and Jeff and I have had this discussion several times. It does, if you read the Constitution, you read the Second Amendment, shall not be infringed has very specific meanings, and I tend to agree with that. On the other hand, we have lost our firearms heritage, and we have lost the fact that people typically get trained at home and that they learn the proper way to handle firearms and understand what they're supposed to do and appropriate use of these kinds of things, and so to try to get that back, and especially when you have had a complete prohibition, we didn't lose those rights all at once, and I don't think we're going to gain them all at once either. So to say, well, we're just going to say there can't be any license, and if there's any kind of restriction like that, I don't like it. Well, I can say I don't like it, but that doesn't mean I'm going to oppose it. I'll take what I can get and incrementally return back to shall not be infringed. It's going to take a while. It's going to take a lot of work. It takes a lot more people being engaged than we've seen. And I think maybe we do start to have people's attention.
Well, I would say also that I would support that, except I'm just going to put it out there. It's been my personal observation that the majority of people with CHLs in the state of Ohio that I've been exposed to are not competent in the handling of their firearm. Now, that's an individual choice. I agree.
Hold on a second, though. To the first gentleman, if we're looking to get it back incrementally, I agree. But if that's the case, then as we're starting to make gains getting it back, by all means, I don't think you should advocate for them, oh, by the way, we're going to completely change and increase the standard. And to the second gentleman, aside from people with CHLs, law enforcement have about the worst record of real-life shootings of anyone.
I'm sorry, we absolutely have to go. We got to be out of here in about 3 seconds. So thanks very much for calling the show. We'll see you next week.